How are you, David Smith?
I'm grooving to the beat. That was great music. I love it. That was great.
And it's free too, which makes it even better.
How conservative is that? I'm going to have to get my drum set up here and I'll just be like, you know.
That's right. You are a music major.
I was. I'm a musician at heart, if not in reality anymore. And yeah, once you get the beat, you always have the beat. You never lose the beat. The beat's there. Even if you can't make any sound, the beat is still there. So I'm just like air drumming. That was great music.
Well, anyway, we continue with our series on the 2024 election. And this is a topic that it's very dear to me, is whether or not to vote. Just to give a little background, in 2012, I came to the conclusion that voting for the lesser of the two evils only perpetuates evil. At the time, I was a precinct chair for the Republican Party, and once it was clear to me that Mitt Romney was going to be the party's nominee, well, I just couldn't support Mitt Romney for a variety of reasons which have nothing to do with this conversation. I did end up supporting Gary Aleppo Johnson, primarily because of his foreign policy stance. In 2016, I enthusiastically supported Donald Trump. He was something new. He was not part of the system. He ran an insurgency campaign, which I found very appealing. And I thought, well, let's roll the dice and see what the outsider is going to be able to achieve. In 2020, I did not vote. I could not bring myself to vote for Trump or Biden. I know a lot of people are going to be appalled by that, but that's just the way I felt. And this year, I'm just, I haven't made up my mind. Excuse me. I'm taking a look at Kennedy. I'm taking a look at DeSantis, but it's very early, so I have plenty of time to make up my mind. You, David, on the other hand, you do believe in voting for the lesser of the two evils, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. So how would you describe your position?
First and foremost, for one thing, vote. I mean, if you just don't vote for whatever reason, philosophical or don't like any of the candidates or whatever, if you just don't vote, then it's kind of cliche, and other people say it a lot, but they're absolutely correct. You are ceding the responsibility of choosing our elected representatives in the election to other people. Now, I hate to take a tone of almost elitism, but I consider you and I to be of above average interest in the political process, in the political parties, the strategies, the candidates, the elected officials, the policies. We are political junkies, and we have a better grasp of the issues entailed in all of the above than the typical person who I have interacted with or that I do interact with. And if a person like you then is saying, well, I'm not going to vote, well, you're essentially ceding it to the responsibility for choosing our elected officials to some real nincompoops, honestly. And if everybody on the political right, where we say that, you know, the Republican Party is the Republican elected officials, especially in Congress, are not there to carry forward our agenda, and they're not there to do the things that we would like to see implemented, they are there to kind of keep us down, keep us from achieving what we want to see implemented. They're there not to serve our best interests, but to serve the interests of the donors and the people who kind of behind closed doors and behind the scenes at the fundraisers and so forth say, well, you know, we'll give you the money to get you elected so that you can have all the perks and benefits of the experience, but we don't want you to do X, Y, Z, implement policy A, B, C, whatever. That's what Republican elected officials are there generally for. The example that comes to mind is in 2010, we took back the House And what I started saying was, we may not control the House and the Senate, but by golly, we do control the House. Meaning, I want to see the Republican majority in the House of Representatives block Democrat agenda. And it seemed like there was just no capability in the Republican House of blocking anything. We couldn't block anything that the Democrats wanted to do. I mean, Harry Reid and the Senate played tremendous games, and nobody in the House, neither the Speaker nor anybody else was capable, John Boehner nor anybody else was capable of countering this. There was no will to shut the whole thing down. The Democrats were pushing everything through that they possibly could, and we were incapable of stopping them. And
okay, well, let me jump in here. Okay, it's not that they're incapable. It's just that they don't want to. I mean, I look at the political system, and for the longest time, I really thought that it would make a difference who you elected. Okay, it might not make a tremendous, but it would make a difference. But I've come to the conclusion that it just doesn't, that it's all a game. It's all theater. The perfect example is Obamacare. I remember the Republican Party, they just opposed it. But when in reality, Obamacare was the Republican plan and they got the left to pass it. So it's not that I disagree. It's not that they are incapable. It's just that they basically agree with the Democrats when it comes to most important issues. They may have a little bit of a difference, or maybe some people would think a lot of difference when it comes to tax rates, when it comes to regulation. But generally speaking, they agree with the direction that the Democrats are taking the country. They may want to go a little bit slower, but they're headed in the same direction. And that's my problem. Now, if someone comes along that I thought, well, maybe he might be able to change the trajectory a little bit, fine, I will vote for that person. But I think we are beyond this argument that somehow the Republican Party is incompetent or lacks a spine or no, they agree with the agenda. It's just all a game to keep up the theater that there are two parties, that your vote matters, that this is the most important election in your lifetime. Every one of them are like that. And the reality is that all this game does is it allows the ruling class to have some sort of legitimacy because they can say, hey, people voted. People voted. It's legitimate. So I look at the GOP and I think that their function is to make sure that there isn't a real opposition that rises that opposes the destination.
I'm somewhat stunned because we've had this conversation before, and I guess it's just finally becoming that much more clear and apparent. The way that you stated at this time, it is absolutely correct. The Republican Party is not there to try to move the ball down the field the direction that we want it to go at all. Period. The illustration that I've used before is that of a boat anchor versus a speedboat. And I draw the illustration saying that the Republican Party, Republican elected officials, are a boat anchor that keeps a speedboat from moving upstream the direction we want to go. Whereas the Democratic Party, when they take control, they pull up the boat anchor, they turn around downstream, and they are just running full gas directly at the falls. And I mean, they're going to go over Niagara Falls and straight to the pile of rocks at the bottom with gleeful aplomb. Is that the right word? Am I using that correctly? It's just whether they know the policies that they're pushing are going to take them there, or whether they don't care and they're just following orders. Whatever the case is, that's what they're doing. There's always the illustration that I list is they're flat out going to destroy this country. The boat anchor reference, it's not going to allow us to get where we want to go. We're going to make minimal progress upstream because you got this thing that's keeping your boat from moving. And that, the way that you stated it, the way that you said it just now, just makes it that much more stark what we are up against and the problem that is present. Because, and I wrote this down, it gives the ruling class legitimacy. And to expound on that, it gives the ruling class the ability to point fingers at the rest of us and say, see, the vote. They're able to say, see, people don't oppose what we want. And every time that you see a Democratic victory, in an election, be it a midterm, a presidential, whatever. Under Biden, in this era, it's like they are taking narrow victories and they are reading this as mandate, as some great mandate on the part of all Americans in the United States. Oh, see, they voted for us. Therefore, since we won this by mail-in ballots over a two-month conducted election, and despite the fact that the Republican got 10 million votes more than any previous Republican, obviously the Americans want to go with the Democratic model, which is far, far left. And there's no such mandate ever.
But that's exactly my point. My point is that when you participate, okay, when you participate, you are giving them legitimacy. Okay, so we have a completely rigged game. Let's be honest about this. It's completely rigged. What, 90% of the incumbents are automatically reelected?
Yes.
Many of them don't even have to campaign, all right? They don't have to do anything.
Well, and to the extent that now we're even talking about both parties not having primary debates.
Exactly.
To back up your statement.
Exactly. So the game is pretty much rigged. They've gotten so good at it that now it's, if you notice, the House margin is very close, the Senate margin is very close. So whenever there's a people's agenda item that the ruling class doesn't like, each side is able to blame the other. Well, we don't have enough votes in the House. I mean, that's what the Republicans did with Obamacare. They got the House, and then they said, well, we need the Senate. And then they got the Senate. And then, well, we need the White House. And then once they got the House, the Senate, and the White House, you had, I mean, Trump, for all of his faults, he would have signed a repeal of Obamacare. What happened? It never passed. Five Republican senators, I think the number was five senators who voted for a full repeal when Obama was sitting in the White House knowing full well that Obama was going to veto it. Well, those five flipped their vote and stopped the repeal. So it's all a game. I mean, it's all a game. But when you participate, whether you like it or not, you're giving them legitimacy. They can say, we won an election. We have earned the right to implement our agenda. Anyway, I want to change the subject a little bit to illustrate my argument. In Italy, a couple of months ago, they held regional elections. Meloni's party, Giorgia Meloni is the current Italian prime minister, did very well. However, 60% of the people did not bother to vote. So, yeah, they got power because the 40% who voted put them in power. But they did not have legitimacy because everybody looked at it and said, no, the party that really won is the party of the non-voters. So there's a difference between power and legitimacy. And I just think if we continue down this road of the lesser of the two evil, I feel like we're trying to do the same thing and hope that somewhere down the line, by some miracle, we're going to get a different result.
That's perhaps the best way it could be stated, because there's that aspect of insanity that we're keeping on doing the same thing again and again and again, but we're expecting a different result. So, I mean, as I say many times about your arguments, it's really hard to argue against you on this because you're making some damn good points. I would say this. I think that you just made a really strong argument for my point with the Italy example. If you had 40% of the American electorate electing Barack Obama and Democrats turning around and saying, see, the American people, this is a mandate that the American people want healthcare, nationalized, you know, social healthcare, whatever. And 60% not participating, that whether or not they want it, they didn't vote for the guy that was running on it. When 60% of the people, the electorate, do not vote, unfortunately, they still get stuck with this other person. In 2016, certainly Democrats can look at it from their perspective and say, well, we did not turn out and we got stuck with Donald Trump. Now, to go back to the illustration that I say I use with the boat anchor, if nothing else, I have to advocate for, yes, vote for somebody, because even if voting for the Republican nominee results in the Republican winning and then not accomplishing anything, I mean, you and I have talked about the net of Donald Trump's time as as president, there's not a whole lot residual there. There's not a whole lot that he did that survived the executive orders of Joe Biden the first 2 days he was in office. But we at least got a four-year reprieve of, let's say, what we're now seeing in this administration.
Well, okay, but the argument of the reprieve, the argument of buying time, that makes sense if you have a strategy in place to overcome the problem or an objective in mind, and the only thing you lack is time. But I don't see a strategy. What I see is, well, we're buying time and we're hoping that with this extra time, by some miracle, something is going to change.
You're absolutely correct.
I think it's better to just say, no, I'm not going to give you legitimacy. Yeah, you have power. You have power. But they have power anyway. So they can either have power and legitimacy because people participate in the charade, or they can just have power. Now, am I happy about certain elements having power? No. But at least power without legitimacy begins to shake the system. And eventually, if you don't have legitimacy, you can't govern in a democracy.
Well, and I think that in the process of our discussing this, I've kind of come to the conclusion that the best that we can do right now is to buy time. And you're absolutely correct that there is no strategy in the idea of just buying time. But what absolutely has to happen is that we have to get Republican voters to wake up and recognize the boat anchor versus speedboat situation. They have to elect people who are going to do both the pulling the boat anchor up out of the water and going upstream the direction we want the system to go. We have to buy the time. So, I mean, there are several steps. You're absolutely right. We can't get any of these. It's not even worth having the conversation about what all the steps are involved. We have to first, one, win elections. And two, by doing so, buy time. Three, force conversations and force people to recognize that we are about to hand off a country that's about to be, maybe not right now, but sometime in the near future, we're about to hand off a system to those who come after us that the United States is no longer the hegemon. Dollar is no longer the reserve currency of the world, and the economic changes that's going to bring about if 60% of the electorate goes to sleep. I mean, if you think Democrats are going to say, see, look, we have a mandate, when they're barely carrying the day, or when they have to play all the games that happened that went into mail-in balloting in 2020, if they win by a 20% margin, even if it's half of what voted in 2020, you can be darn tootin'. They're going to say, look, see, this is a mandate.
But wait a minute. The Democrats are going to say that whether they win by one vote or whether they win by 300 votes or whether they're 1% or 30%. They're going to say that. So that's not an argument one way or another. I guess my problem with the entire system is that it's not really responsive to the general population. So we have a choice. We can either continue the farce and continue and pretend that we have this democracy or constitutional republic when all the evidence is contrary to that. We don't have it. We can play along a little bit longer, or we can just say, no, we need to just dramatically change the approach. And the only weapon that we have as voters is whether or not we give legitimacy to the system. Now, as I said before, if you have candidates, they are bringing important issue, like you said, issues that would wake people up, I will support that candidate. I will vote that candidate. I'm all for waking up people, but you have to have the right candidates. You have to have the right leaders to do that, because people at the end of the day need to be led. Okay, they're not just going to wake up on their own just because you present facts. So you need leaders to do the waking up you're talking about. I'm all for supporting those type of individuals. What I'm against is okay, this guy might take his time taking me over the cliff. That's what I oppose.
What do you think a second term of Joe Biden, given world events, what's going on internationally, given the status of the United States in the hegemon thing, this isn't a recent development. You can easily say this is a situation that's been developing since 9/11, if not longer than that, but certainly since 9/11. The wars that we just prosecuted in Iraq and Afghanistan harmed us internationally. The image of Afghanis clinging to the outside, and he's showing the image of the military jet taking off from Bagram Air Force Base or wherever it was in Afghanistan. That image is going to be the image in the minds of the world in terms of the decline of the United States. What did the start of the decline look like, or what is the decline of the former only superpower defined as visually? That's the image. There are other issues we're not talking about in this segment that you can bring in. You could go even longer than that. But what does the second term of that look like?
Okay. I would not get too hung up on the image of the Afghan hanging off the plane for one simple reason that I remember in 1975. Yes, I am old. That the image of the Americans evacuating out of the American helicopter on top of the embassy in Vietnam, for some reason, America just doesn't seem to be able to leave places in an orderly manner. Anyway, that was 1975, and the United States went on to win the Cold War, and I think everyone has forgotten about that. What do I expect is going to happen in the second term of Biden? Pretty much the same thing. As far as the United States being a hegemon, I think pretty much that came to an end when we made the foolish decision to push for this Ukraine war. They had one plan, and that was for the sanctions to destabilize Russia. When that didn't work, they did not have a plan B. They still don't have a plan B. And they have so committed themselves to this endeavor that they can't find a way out. So I think it's going to be a continuation of that. Russia and China pretty much have decided that they're going to establish a new way to conduct international business. Let's say that Biden gets defeated. Let's say that Ron DeSantis gets into the White House. I don't see how Ron DeSantis can stop that. I don't see how any Republican or Democrat or anybody can stop that. I think that we are past the point of no return when it comes to the United States being a hegemon. Domestically, what do I think Biden will do? Basically the same thing he's doing now. Is it great? No. Is it the end of the world? I don't think so. I know that a lot of Republicans are going to hear this. Oh my God, you know, Joe Biden is the worst thing that ever happened. And well, I remember when Obama was the worst thing. I remember when Clinton was the worst thing. So when you talk to partisans, both sides do the same thing. When the other party is in power, that is the worst thing that could ever happen to America. So I'm not into that. Biden is not great. I certainly would not vote for him, but I'm not so terrified by him that I'm willing to accept anything, get him out.
Well, the reason that I ask that is when you look at where we were January of 2021, what's happened though during the Biden administration in terms of how China's acting towards us or just on the international stage in general, how Russia and China are coordinating. And now that you have what's perceived as weakness in the White House with Joe Biden being, but if you just consider the continuation of what we've seen so far with Joe Biden.
This idea that conservatives have that somehow if we have a president who struts on the international stage, projects strength, whatever that is what keeps other world leaders from misbehaving. If it weren't for Joe Biden's weakness, Putin would have never invaded Ukraine. That's simply not the case. I think the difference between Trump and Biden when it comes to Putin is Trump had made a lot of noise during the 2016 campaign, noise that I liked, that he would try to establish a different relationship with Russia. And I think Putin felt that perhaps Trump would be more willing to take into consideration Russia's securities concerns, and he would be able to work out some sort of modus vivendi. That's it. That's the difference. If anything, Biden has been extremely tough on Russia. He has imposed the toughest sanctions. He has sent billions of dollars in military equipment to Ukraine. He sabotaged the Nord Stream pipeline to make sure that the Europeans could never walk back their sanctions against Russia. The problem with what Biden has done is that it has backfired. It has backfired on America. It has backfired on the West. So if you want to criticize Biden, criticize him for being reckless, for being destructive. That's a valid criticism, not this nonsense of, oh, he's so weak, he's so... What do you want Biden to do? Nuke Moscow?
When it comes down to, you know, this conversation, do we vote, do we not vote, as far as the Republican Party is concerned, or any candidate for that matter? When it comes down to that question, superimposed on the issue that I've just brought up and you've addressed, I mean, the point that you make about Biden as the aggressor in all of this, obviously, even during the Trump years, China and Russia were kind of coming together, even though it didn't really happen until, I guess, Trump became president.
One of the reasons why I liked Trump talking about establishing a different relationship with Russia is because I was hoping that an alliance between Russia and the United States would counter China. China as an emerging world superpower. What brought China and Russia together is the Ukraine war. Again, we go back to Biden being destructive. Not intentionally, but that's the result of his policy. And not only the war in Ukraine, but Biden's, all his tough talk on Taiwan, the Chinese looked at that and said, well, I guess we're next. So let's team up with Russia and counter the United States, counter the West. And that's exactly what happened. Again, it goes back to my point that the real criticism of Biden should not be that he's weak. It should be that he is destructive.
Well, you make a very strong point on that, which honestly, that could be a separate podcast unto itself. I think we should bring that up and talk about that, because that's a really interesting kind of sidebar that's come up in this conversation. But again, I think that your point about this has been because of Biden's destructiveness, recklessness, I think that you're making a very strong argument for you have to vote for whoever the Republican nominee is, because we've got to get that presence out of the White House.
I just want to be clear. I'm not saying to never, ever vote. I'm just saying don't settle for the lesser of the two evils. I am thrilled that RFK has entered the race. I am taking a very close look at DeSantis, but I will say this. If DeSantis goes down the road of we need to be tough and Biden is weak and strength and America needs to be the beacon of freedom, that's going to be my clue. That he's not the guy to change anything. I think you and I will never agree on this question, so let's bring this episode to an end. It's always great talking to you, David.
Yes, you as well. Great topic, great conversation. I look forward to the next
one. All right, bye.
Bye-bye.